Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Ganesh. And dear listeners, Sairam from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And the Dasara celebrations is on. In fact, tomorrow will begin the 7-day Veda Purusha Saptaha Gyana Yagnam, which will culminate on October 22nd, the day of Vijayadashami, which is again a Thursday. So we will have the opportunity of spending that day also with you throughout the day, through Thursday live programs, and dwelling on that significant day, the day which really stands out in the Prashantinilam calendar for various spectacular moments that the Avatar has blessed this day with. In fact, Vijayadashami Day is the day when the previous incarnation of Bhagwan, when he chose Shirdi as his abode, he decided to culminate his earthly sojourn on this day. But if you go by the English calendar, today is the Shirdi Sai Mahasamadhi Day. Shirdi Sai left his mortal coil on October 15, 1918. So it is indeed a very auspicious day, and who can forget those Vijayadashami days of the yesteryears, when a torrential cascade of vibhuti from an upturned urn inundated not only the silver statue of Shirdi Sai but converted the people sitting around also into mounds of that sacred, sanctifying and uplifting ash. Mr. B.S. Keshava Vittal of Bangalore says, when I remarked to Swami that he said he would come to my house as promised, and he did not, Swami said with a smile, I did. Did you not see the indication? Did you not see the signs of my presence? And it was only when Swami said that, that his mind went back to that day when Bhagwan had promised he would come, and he recollected how he had seen 3 footprints. All of the right foot in his home, and how the Lord was now acknowledging that they indeed were signs of his indefinable presence. To Mr. M.S. Dikshit, Swami had said, I shall come to your home in January. But Mr. Dikshit had doubts, so he immediately blurted out, January of which year, Swami? And Swami asserted, next month, middle of January, without fail, I will be in your house. Not only that, Swami placed his hand on Dikshit's hand and repeated the assurance. And then on January 17th, when Mrs. Dikshit was eating her lunch, she heard Baba's voice calling Dikshit, Dikshit twice. She ran up to the door but found no one there. She returned and resumed her meal. And then she saw a glimpse of Baba's face peeping into the room. Startled, she rose, went into the next room, but she found no one there. But what she found completely stupefied her. She saw 7 footprints leading from the outer door to the shrine, left, right in that order, and both the feet culminating by the side of the shrine. And they were all marked out by vibhuti. Just the outline was in vibhuti. And in a few days, the vibhuti of 1 foot, 1 footprint, grew and rose up to 2 inches in height. While the vibhuti Sundara Sai made his presence felt in so many fragrant ways, and he continues to do this in his own mysterious, inimitable style, but he never lets anyone get away with only the sweet experiences. One Swami asked a student, what is the meaning of Pada Puja? What is the meaning of worshipping the feet of the Lord? And the student described how Pada Puja of the Lord is such an exceptional privilege, where you can actually worship the feet of the Lord with flowers, with sandalwood, with rose water, turmeric and so on. And how Swami used to grant this privilege in those early years. But Swami said, no, this is not Pada Puja. Real Pada Puja, real worship of the feet is to follow the footprints that the Lord leaves on the sands of time whenever he takes a human form. Pada Puja during Dasara is pursuing the path that the Lord so painstakingly demonstrated by Himself taking on a form in flesh and blood. Once when Professor Nanjundaya, the former controller of examinations of Bhagwan's university, was coming to Prashantanilayam for his darshan, Chitravati was in spate. This was in the 70s and he got delayed because there was water everywhere and he was coming through Kadiri and he had to somehow cross river Chitravati and come to his presence. And even as he was making this journey to Puttaparthi, Swami was narrating his trials with the waters to Swami Karunyananda. And Swami was telling Swami Karunyananda, Nanjundaya is coming, but he is getting delayed. And you know, he's coming with a basket, he's coming with fruits and flowers, and all this description was going on. The life commentary of his journey was being relayed by Bhagwan to Swami Karunyananda. And finally, when Nanjundaya sir came, Swami immediately told Karunyananda, see, I told you, ask Karunyananda, he will tell you. What did I tell just now? Didn't I tell you he will come with a basket with fruits and flowers? Imagine how thrilled Nanjundaya sir was, you know, what a welcome to Bhagwan's presence. And Swami greeted him so lovingly, inquired about his journey, his welfare and so on. And then Nanjundaya sir requested to Swami if he can offer that flower garland that he had so lovingly brought. And Swami was so kind, very gently he actually bent his head, he condescended and he made it easy and reachable for him to place the garland over his head. And Nanjundaya sir was in absolute delight. Swami had allowed him to personally garland him. And he thought, today is really my day. Today is the most precious day of my life. Why not take another chance? And he said, Swami, can I offer these fruits also to you? Generally, Swami would accept a basket of fruits or sweets and Swami would pass it on to someone who is serving him to place it in the kitchen or put it in the store. But Nanjundaya sir, that day, given the attention that Bhagwan was showering on him, he said, Swami, can I place these fruits at your lotus feet? And Swami is very gladly consented. So one by one, he kept each fruit at Bhagwan's feet. And imagine, he was in 17th heaven. Everything that he had wished, Bhagwan was fulfilling more than how he had ever imagined. And as he was swimming in this bliss, the thought came, if I have such kind of devotion, what else do I need in life? He was so delighted with his spiritual progress. He told Swami, Swami, if one has devotion, that is enough, isn't it, Swami? And Swami instantly replied, Nanjundaya, this kind of devotion is a burden on my head and it is of no use to you. You can imagine the bubble that Nanjundaya sir was in burst in a second. Swami said, if you want to know devotion, what is devotion? Read the Bhagavad Gita, go to chapter 12 and read Bhakti Yoga if you want to know what is devotion. Advaishta sarva bhutana maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirahankara samadukha sukakshami. One who is not jealous, who is not envious, but who is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself as a proprietor, who is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled and engaged in devotional service with determination, and whose mind and intelligence is fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is my bhakta. Such a one is very dear to me. Tulya ninda stutir mauni santushta yena kena chita aniketa stiramatir bhakti mam me priyo naraha. one who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, who is always silent, satisfied with everything, who does not care for any place, any residence, who is fixed in knowledge and who is engaged in devotional service. Such a person is very dear to me. And those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, they are the ones very, very, very dear to me. This is the devotion that the Lord expects. In fact, in very simple manner, way back in 1947, in that historic letter that Swami wrote to his brother, Sri Sesa Maharaj Garu, Swami very clearly said, I have a task to foster all mankind and fill people's lives with ananda. I have a vow to lead all who stray away from the straight path into goodness again and save them. I am attached to a work that I love, to remove the suffering of the poor and grant them what they lack. And I have a reason to be proud, for I rescue all who worship and adore me. And then comes, I have a definition of devotion. I expect that those devoted to me treat joy and grief, gain and loss with equal fortitude. I will never give up those who attach themselves to me. When I am thus engaged in my beneficial task, how can my name ever be tarnished? I treat with equanimity the honor or dishonor that may result. Internally, I am totally unconcerned. I act but solely in the outer world. If I talk and move about, it is entirely for the sake of the external world and for making people realize the advent of divinity. Other than this, I have no concern with anything. I do not belong to any place. I am not attached to any name. I have no mine or thine. I respond to whatever name you might use. I go wherever I am needed or called. For me, the world is something afar and apart. I act and move only for the sake of mankind. No one can comprehend my glory. How, whosoever it may be, whatever be the method of inquiry, and no matter how long they attempt. And Swami says, way back in 1947, you will yourself see the full glory unfolding in the coming years. And haven't we seen that glory of Satya Sai Avatar? And we continue to see its magnificence and munificence and its brilliance, the brilliance of pure love. And this year, especially when we celebrate his 90th birthday, we have only seen how even though the physical form of Satya Sai is not with us, the glory of Satya Sai is unstoppable. Just yesterday, I was talking to a Sai brother from Mauritius, and he told me how in that island nation of just 2,000 odd square kilometers, there are more than 40,000 devotees. And only a handful of them have actually seen Swami in his physical form. But all these devotees, they connect to him, they get charged by him, they get healed by him and become whole in his love. Just like consciousness, pure love is all pervading and indomitably powerful. And today we are fortunate that we have in the studios five brothers from another island nation, among the most popular and populous nations of the world, the island of Great Britain. Yes, they are part of a big contingent of youth from UK to participate in the annual Gram Seva of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. And for them, it is not just serving in the villages. Service is only one part of their pilgrimage. The other and equally important part is the sadhana, which is complementary to seva. Service without sadhana is sordid, and sadhana without service is insipid. And these youth are fortunate, really fortunate, to be personally guided by the ever energetic Mr. Ajit Popat, the firebrand devotee of the Lord, who has been instrumental in bringing along with him thousands of devotees from United Kingdom to his lotus feet. For more than three decades now, He indeed has been an inspiration to the young and old alike in walking on the footprints that we talked about. Walking on the footprints, the eternal footprints of our ever effervescent Sai. We had the opportunity to have Mr. Ajit Popat speak to us in the previous week in Outside Inside, Deep Inside, October 8, 2015. And I'm really grateful to Swami that today we get to hear from people who have been mentored by him by the mercy of our most beloved Lord. So that is what we will do tonight in this last segment of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. And today we discuss the merciful Midas touch of the Divine Master. How the Divine Master has touched, transformed and resurrected the lives in so many dimensions of five brothers from United Kingdom. We have Brother Arvind Tank, who is professionally a technical consultant in advanced computer solutions. We have Mr. Dinesh Lakhani, who has worked as a portfolio manager and investment analyst for over 30 years in reputed international firms. We have Brother Kapil Dev Prashar, who is also into financial services, and he is also the regional youth coordinator for Region 3 in Satya Sai Seva Organizations, United Kingdom. We have Mr. Mukesh Mamtora, who is the CEO of Forum Insurance Services. And we have Brother Atul Bailur, who is working as a IT manager at Ford Motor Company. So this is the galaxy of people that Swami has sent today to Radio Sai for Outside Inside, Deep Inside. Welcome, brothers, to Radio Sai on this beautiful Thursday.
Sairam.
So, since you are all so much into Gram Seva, so much of your time every day is spent in this sadhana of Gram Seva, can we begin this conversation by reflecting on why is Gram Seva such an important part of your spiritual journey with Bhagwan? Right from 2004, we have this youth from United Kingdom led by Mr. Ajit Popat who have involved themselves with the Gram Seva, working along with the students of the university. And this is something that has continued even after Bhagwan left his physical form. And you, and I always see that for you, this Gram Seva has been such a special part of your spiritual journey. Can we start with you, Brother Arvind?
Sorry.
Tell me, what is the special relationship that the youth that you have with Gram Seva?
Sairam. First of all, I'd like to say that I am here because of Swami's immense love. It is only because of His grace that I come for Gram Seva. However, my journey to Swami started some time back before 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to take the opportunity to share that with you.
Sure.
Once, in an interview, Swami allowed us to do some performance. And we said, thank you, Swami. You're extremely kind. Swami responded by saying, I'm head to toe kindness. And it's because of that kindness that He's allowed me to come for the last 11 years for Gram Seva. But grace has to be earned, and it is tested also.
Yes.
And my testing, as it were, started in 1994. This was the time when I came to Prashanti with my mother and father. My mother suffered from a number of strokes, so she was paralyzed on her left-hand side and on her right-hand side. And I was very close to my mother, and I couldn't see her suffer like that. So that was the commencement of my spiritual journey through my mother. So I took her to various parts of UK, various gurus, to get a cure for my mother. I met one Maharaj here, who is actually from India, Jammu Kashmir. And we took him there. And he was able to help her, but not to the level that I wanted. But he said to me, take your mother to her guru, which is Satya Sai Baba. So I decided that I'm going to take my mother and father to see Swami. My spiritual pilgrim started with my mother and father. And our first stop was Shirdi Mandir. And then we went to various parts of Gujarat, Dwarka, Somnath. At the same time of doing the spiritual journey, we visited my mother's relatives, because she hasn't traveled for many years. So she saw all her brothers and sisters. One place, my mama, he actually said that if you arrived 10 minutes late, we would have missed her. So she actually got to see her as well. Our final stop was Prashanthi Nilayam, Swami's residence. We arrived here in February 1994. My father unfortunately didn't believe in Swami. And the situation in Prashanthi at that time was difficult for him. And he didn't like the place. But I was determined that Swami should see my mother and cure her. I brought her in wheelchair, and one of the prayers I made whilst getting onto the plane was, Swami, I'm taking this wheelchair. I don't want to bring it back. Please bless me. So we were here. Swami would look at my mother during darshan. And through his grace, I was given first line most of the time. And I would write a letter to Swami saying, Swami, please look at my mother. Please cure her. Swami took the letter. This happened. Unfortunately, my father wanted to actually leave the place because Swami wasn't doing anything according to him. So we decided to leave for England. In the morning, the day we were supposed to travel, my mom didn't wake up. She was breathing, but she didn't respond. So I took her to the general hospital here, Swami's hospital. And Dr. Bhagwatam at the time said she fell into a coma.
Dr. Bhagwat.
Bhagwatam. So we had to keep her there. There was no choice. He said, pray to Swami and get directions from Swami. I prayed every day. I wrote a letter, and Swami took the letter, but Swami didn't say anything. He'd look at me, he'll smile, he'll bless me, but he didn't respond any other way. So many days passed, 2-3 days. My dad was getting anxious and wanted to leave. So I asked doctor, please speak to Swami for instructions. Swami said, she is not to be moved from this place. She belongs here.
She's not to be moved from
Pukhati. She's not to be moved from this place. She belongs here.
Wow.
Was Swami's words. And Swami gave vibhuti, said, apply this. So I was actually inside the hospital living with my mom at the time. Applied vibhuti. On 23rd February, Thursday morning, my mother left the physical body and merged in Swami. That is why I come for Gram Seva.
Oh my God.
I was only 24. My father didn't believe in Swami. It was an extremely difficult time for me. And Swami held... Now Swami is now my mother and spiritual mother. He held my hand and he was so kind. He arranged all the funeral activities and made sure everything was done properly. So I come here because this is my mother's place and my Sai mother's place. So we traveled back to England. And I prayed and I kept coming to Prashanthi to get a glimpse of Swami and to get an opportunity to speak to him, to experience the love that I'm now missing. Not just the physical love from my human mother, but also my divine mother. So in 2003, I had the opportunity to come with a group, with Ajit Bhai's group. Exactly 9 years to the day, we had an interview on the 23rd of February. And with his grace, Swami said to sit right in front of him. So he made me to sit right at his feet. When my mother wasn't well, I would actually take her feet on my lap and I would press it. Swami's feet were literally on my lap.
Oh my God.
And that was my first experience of actually being that close to Swami. He was so majestic. He was so wonderful. And I looked into his eyes and I completely lost myself. And he's so kind. And he wanted to bless me more. So there was an incident regarding the fan. It wasn't on or something was not right. And one of my brother wanted to switch it on but couldn't do it. So Swami said, "Don't worry, I'll come and do it." As he stood up, he put his hand on my head and he kept it there right to the moment he was stretching. So he blessed me, just like my mother used to do. And that is why I actually come for Gram Seva. So the next day, Swami also gave us more interview. Again, he kept me at his feet. So he's loving me just like my mother. So Swami is my mother. In the same next year, 2004, I was invited to come for the Gram Seva. This was my first Gram Seva trip. And my experience of Gram Seva, which I'll touch upon later, for the first time was amazing. But I was invited for Gram Seva 2004, 5, 6, 7, and also 9. I'd like to just speak to you about my incident in 2009. It involves my father.
Okay.
Now, my father was not well when we were supposed to come in September. So I told my father that I'm going to Swami. By then, now he's transformed. Because he's seen me go to Gram Seva every year. Even though he wasn't well, he said to me, "You go." He was extremely unwell. So I headed towards the airport to come to Swami. And my father headed towards the hospital.
Oh my God.
And he blessed me. He goes, "Go. Do Baba's work." This is the same father who didn't want to stay here for a minute. So I came. Everything was well. We started Gram Seva, went to the villages. A few days later, I think it must have been fourth, fifth day of the Gram Seva, Swami came for darshan. And as he approached from his gates, from a distance, he looked at me. This look was very different. It's not one I was used to. He looked at me, stared at me. As he came closer round, he looked further at me. And then he went past. So I thought this was an amazing look he gave me. I went back to my room and I received a phone call from my brother. And the news was that my father also passed away.
Oh my God.
And emerged into Swami. So that look of Swami, to me, was, in retrospect, father's with me also. So my mother and my father is here. And it is nothing because of my karma or my work that I'm doing Gram Seva. I think it's only blessings of my mother and father.
Amazing. In fact, as you narrate your story, so many thoughts flood my mind. When you think in retrospect, you know, you always discover how so beautiful manner Swami plans our life. Swami plans our every step of our journey. And Swami ensured that your mother saw all her relatives before she came to Prashanti. And, you know, he ensured that your mother got the best gift that she can get. The best gift of being in the lap of the Divine Mother.
Whilst I was here during the funeral, many of the people said, one lady in fact said to me that, "My son, he never left Puttaparthi. One day he left Puttaparthi and he had an accident outside Puttaparthi and he passed away. Your mother,
yes,
has never seen Swami physically, has never been to this place before. And she's come here only to merge with him, Swami. This is Kasi for her."
Yes, he planned it in such a manner that, you know, her final journey was as close to his lotus feet as it is possible. Amazing.
Brother, my mind, when my father passed away, was very confused at the time. I was going through a lot of trouble at that time. Because one, here, I'm here to do Swami's work. And over there, most of my families don't believe in Swami, but they support me. And I'm grateful to them. But they wanted me to do the last rite because I was the youngest son. So I was in two minds. What should I do? Father's already blessed me to do Swami's work. So I spoke to Ajibai. He kindly advised me to speak to somebody senior to get advice. They said, Swami is not going to give you any instruction to go or stay. It's your relationship with Swami. You approach Swami and ask him yourself. So Ajibai said, sit on the veranda. So I said, no, I don't want to sit on the veranda. I'll sit where I normally sit. And Swami came around. And the question I had in my mind was, Swami, please tell me what to do. Swami came, he looked at me, and he didn't answer. He went away. So again, I didn't get my answer. So again, the next day, I thought about it. And I said, I must do my final rites for my father. That's my duty. And that would make Swami happy. So again, I sat in the line. Swami came. And the next day, Swami's expression was a lot more different. He was smiling. And he looked at me. He said something in Telugu which I didn't understand. But I could see he was blessing me. I said to Swami, I'm going to Father to do the rites. And he blessed me. So I got my answer. And I was worried because time had passed. By the time I reached England, I don't know what would happen. With Swami's grace, when I saw my father, his skin was so fresh. It's as if he passed away just that day. Everything happened so smoothly. And I can see Swami's hand in that. If you do Swami's work, Swami does your work.
Amazing.
And this is my personal experience.
Fantastic. They say, if you place everything in God's hands, then you will see God's hand in everything. And I think that is how each one of our lives is. In fact, as you were talking about experiencing Bhagwan as the mother and father, today is the birth anniversary of Sri APJ Abdul Kalam. And I'm just reminded of how when he came to Prashantinidam on one occasion, he was staying in the Sai Srinivas guest house, and Swami had asked two brothers to look after him. The previous day, Swami told one of these brothers that, tell Kalam that tomorrow I am sending this special dish for him. And so Swami personally went to the kitchen the next day and prepared this special curry for Kalam, sir. And when the boys served this to President Kalam, when he saw that, he was in tears. It was a curry made with beans and coconut, exactly the one which his mother used to make for him.
That is
what is the Divine Mother. That is how powerful is His love. So, Brother Dinesh, you are someone who has also been a part of the Gram Seva for so long. So tell us what propels you to every time be a part of this Seva Yatna.
Yes, Sai Ram. Actually, this is my first Gram Seva, and today is actually my first day. I just arrived this morning.
Oh, okay.
So looking forward to Gram Seva from tomorrow.
Okay.
And I've been wanting to come for quite a long time. But as Ajit Bhai said this just this afternoon, that you can only come when you're chosen to come.
Mm.
So Swami has graciously chosen me to come here with both my sons this time.
Okay, so it's your son who has been involved with Gram Seva.
Yeah, my son. And
okay.
Gram Seva has had a special sort of place in our family.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to 2007.
Okay.
When Ajit Bhai kindly invited, and Swami kindly invited my older son Rohan to come for Gram Seva, and he was all prepared to do that. But my wife at that time was suffering from cancer, and suddenly her health worsened over a couple of weeks, and she was coming towards the final stages. So we had a decision to make at that time whether Rohan should actually come or not. And we talked to Ajit Bhai as quite a lot, but in the end, Rohan said he wanted to go and serve Swami. And my wife as well said it was, to go and do Swami's work, as Arun's mother had said, and father had said. So it's a similar situation. And so Rohan came to Prashanti for Gram Seva, and after a few days, I think 3 or 4 days, my wife passed away while Rohan was still here.
Oh my God.
And I rang Ajit Bhai and told him the news, and asked him to convey the news to Rohan as well. But the way that the news was conveyed to Rohan was also quite special. Ajit Bhai was giving a talk in Swai Kunwant Hall, and he mentioned that one of the boys had come for Gram Seva, and this unfortunately his mother had passed away. And at that point, Swami looked at Rohan directly and connected with him directly.
Oh, wow.
And from that instance, I think he's been actually transformed as well. The other thing was when Ajit Bhai told Swami that my wife had passed away, he said, "I know, she's with me now." So since 2007, Rohan has been coming for Gram Seva every year, if he can make it. I think he's missed one or two. But that's the special place that Gram Seva has for us as a family. And this year, Swami has graciously invited all three of us to come here.
Wow, fantastic. It's a long, it's the entire family's association with Gram Seva.
That's right. Yes.
And as we listen to all these stories, what comes to mind, you know, which gets just reiterated again and again, is how Swami knows each one of us outside, inside, deep inside. He knows us. He knows us so much, much more than perhaps sometimes, much more than what we know about ourselves. He knows, because he knows our past, present and future. He's the Sadguru. Can I ask you, Brother Kapil Dev, you are someone who is also the service coordinator in Region 3 of UK. And how has Gram Seva helped you in your perspective about service? Has it made any difference in the way you look at your responsibility there? Has it added any new dimensions to your thinking and the way you approach to work in the Sai organization?
Saram, Brother Vishu.
Yeah. Saram.
I work as, or the responsibility which is given to me is that of the regional youth coordinator. And part of that responsibility is aimed at putting together, formulating various activities for the youth.
Yes.
Within that region. Study circles, bhajans, service activities. I think Gram Seva, as some of the brothers have already mentioned, some will mention further, has had a huge impact on our lives. It's a life-defining moment, if I may use that term, mm-hmm. A life-changing moment. If we look at it from a basic childish or human perspective, it's the pinnacle of a pilgrimage to Prashanti Nilayam. Mm-hmm. For a lot of us youth, we've been involved with Swami's grace. We've been very fortunate to be involved in musical performances, plays, group pilgrimages from the UK. And Gram Seva is like the pinnacle of that. It's the ultimate. Mm-hmm. That association with Swami, because it was something that was very dear to Swami. We all know how it came about, the inception of Gram Seva since 2000. And the UK having a special place, if I may use this term, in Swami's heart, in terms of the opportunity he's been giving to youth, and youth members wanting to be part of that.
Yes.
The privileges which are given to us in terms of interacting with Swami students, we learn so much from the students. Humility, dedication, attention to detail, something that Bhagwan was very particular about, something that you would know as a student from your formative years. And these lessons, these experiences do go a great way in terms of shaping our lives, one would like to think and one would hope. In terms of serving women in the organization, the Satyasai UK fraternity, we try our level best to learn from these experiences and obviously have try to ensure that these have an impact, a positive impact on our work. Not just our work within the Sai fraternity, but also elsewhere, our professional lives, our family lives. And what is service? Service is ultimately there. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Swami says the service is not there to see the impact that you bring upon others, but it's there to bring an impact, a change amongst within yourself, shattering that identification, shattering that ego, because it's an opportunity to develop that one-to-one connection with the other. And this brings me to one of the major activities that we're involved in as a youth contingent, which is monthly Narayana Seva that we do. And in a nutshell, it involves a group of us youth from various Sai Samitis, Sai centers, spread across our region, meeting up once a month and putting together 100 lunch bags and then going early on a Sunday morning to central London, for quarter to seven, along a famous part of central London called the Strand, and delivering these items, dry food items, non-perishable food items, hot beverages. It doesn't sound like much. We're not exactly solving the issue of homelessness there. But the way I see it is there's an opportunity for youth to come together, engage in satsang, and develop that one and that connection with Swami. And also to develop that human touch, that, you know, that element of humanness with your fellow being.
Yes.
Two instances that have come about as a result of this experience I'd like to share. One such instance, and these have both taken place after the Narayana Seva itself. So the first instance I remember, the homeless are they appreciate everything that we do. They're always thankful. And one individual approaches us and says, my friend, do you understand? He actually used that term. Do you understand what the problem with this country is?
Mm-hmm.
I was taken aback. He said the problem is with the education system.
Mm-hmm.
The education system in the UK is flawed. Children are not taught to appreciate the value of time and the value of money. And that hit me. You can imagine, like, if I can use a cricketing analogy, like an in-swinging Yorker and dislodging your middle stump.
Mm-hmm.
I was completely bowled over there and then. Education system. Swami, it took me back to, you know, Swami's emphasis on educare, or the institutions that he set up. She set the Sai Institute of Higher Learning, where it's not only secular education, but value-based education in terms of character development. Not appreciating the value of what this individual said, children are not taught the value of money and of time. Swami says, God is time, or time is God. Money is God. That's one instance. The second instance was again at the end of Narayana Seva, and another individual approaches me, a homeless person, and with tears in his eyes, you know, thanking from the depths of his heart the work that we've done. And obviously, some of us, we don't know how to react to that. Just like in the villages when we go for the Gram Seva, and any of the Ammas will come and, you know, they'll start, because they see us as Swami.
Yes.
They'll come and touch, you would have experienced this, they'll come and touch our feet, or if we go to touch their feet, they will, you know, no, what are you doing? And then a very profound statement emerges from this chap, where he says, you know, the ultimate goal of life, and this, I'll tell you the irony behind this, because this is a chap who's sitting on the street with his lunch bag. In one hand he has a cigarette, in the other hand he has a beer can. But what he says, or what he says to me, is the highest form of Vedanta, Advaita philosophy. The purpose of life is to realize that this outer world is but a reflection of your inner true self. Yad bhavam tad bhavati, as you would say. And that experience is the highest form of consciousness, the highest form of God, which is essentially pure love. This is a homeless person who just said this to me. Now I'm thinking to myself, if this is not Swami's, proof of Swami's omnipresence, both instances, then what is? And the reason why this is important, the second reason why, obviously, it flows from our experience of Gram Sev in terms of what we're taught, how to value, you know, service, or how we should go about service, you know, to develop that love. But in this day and age where, whether we like it or not, we do feel that separation, you know, the physical form is not there, and we are yearning for something. That for me was proof of his omnipresence. There have been many other instances, but ever since Mahasamadhi 2011, the two main instances I can pick upon from my time in the UK is those two instances, and through service. And that is something I'll cherish.
Service. Illumination through service.
Illumination through service, definitely.
Service. That is what is Sai, right? Service.
Absolutely.
Adoration, illumination. So you adore Sai through service, and he ensures that you are illumined.
Absolutely.
And it's really amazing in the sense that, you know, as you go in these dirt and sand of the villages, you don't know what pearls and diamonds are there. Because you don't know which occasion Bhagwan will take to share one pearl of an experience with you, to give you a diamond of a delight, and which will perhaps transform you in a manner you have never ever thought.
Most definitely. I think the biggest thing is Swami's love. I mean, if you were to ask all of us, if we could sum it up in one word or one phrase, what is it that draws us back? It is Swami's love. And that is something that, not just the five of us, all the brothers, all those individuals throughout the years that have come as part of Uncle's Gram Seva group trips, it's the love that we've experienced in the villages. And that's none other than Bhagwan's manifestation, Bhagwan's love.
Amazing. True. I mean, if you want to describe Swami, yes, that is the best definition you can give. Love. But it is as difficult to explain love as it is difficult to explain Swami. Brother Mukesha, can we go to your story of love with Bhagwan, your story of how and when did you start experiencing this love that Swami is?
Sairam, everyone. I've been very, very fortunate that I've come here several times. I've been involved in a lot of projects. But I just want to go on to the Gram Seva thing immediately. As the brothers have said, it's definitely Swami's love which pulls you. And having been here so many times, this is my home. I've been involved in medical camps in Malawi as well, and a lot of other projects. But having heard from other brothers, I always yearned to come for Gram Seva to see how different it is. And one of the main things which sticks out in you doing seva abroad in Africa or anywhere else, like in here, it's totally different. The culture is there, the spirituality is there, the love is there. And the main thing which sticks out is how you do seva. We're very fortunate, everything's done for us when we come here. We travel in comfortable vehicles, most of the work is done. But the main thing was, what we do is we give prasadam, we give laddus, and we give clothing as well. The other sevas we've done in Africa and all that is just medical seva. And the nearest of experiencing Swami's love is when we did Narayan seva for everyone. But here it is and it's very different. And as you rightly said, you don't know what's around the corner. This is my third trip. And one of the main touching things last trip I was here was as we were going around villages, in a very small village, in a corner part there was a very senior old lady sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And because she was on her own, I think the understanding is that if there's a household, you would do the seva and you ask how many people and all that. But the moment I went there, I think I had a translator with me, and I gave her a sari and obviously Baba's photos, and she touched my feet. This is how different Gram Seva is compared to everything else. And the experience you get is totally different. But my connection goes a long way back. I was very fortunate, I must say from the outset, that Ajit Bhai has been the instrument for me to bring in to Swami. He's been my mentor. He's my elder brother, and he's inspired me to do a lot of things. But initially it was way back in 1990 when I first came on my own. My wife was a devotee, and we just came here for a couple of days. I never heard of Swami, just seen his photo. We came here, landed at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2:30, and we joined the queue. And I just sat down. In those days, it was a token line, and there was sand there. I just sat down, and as I sat down, the whole line got up. So obviously, I'm still sitting, and that's the first experience that this is a token line. And I argued, I don't need to go. So I was that ignorant about these things. Fortunately, we got seated, got a front place. There was I think it was a Tibetan monk sitting next to me, and he goes, when Sai Baba comes, you must touch his feet, get his blessings. And I said, yeah, okay, you know, I don't touch everyone's feet just like that. And that's how I was. My wife at the time was suffering very heavily with eczema.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had family problems as well. My father was alcoholic at the time. So we were here. A lot happened instead of one day, we ended up staying 3 days. And one of the incidents was that Argentinian group was given an interview, and we were told that what an interview is. Eventually, when we were away near the drinks area, this gentleman came and gave a packet of vibhuti. And he said, you take it. And I said, no, we don't take it. I said to my wife, don't touch. You know, it's not meant for us. But anyway, we left. And when we were leaving, I challenged Swami. I said, Sai Baba, if they say you are God, then you'll fulfill 3 of my wishes, or you'll cure. One was obviously my wife's eczema. The second prayer was, my dad's alcoholic, we're going through a tough phase. And third, at the time, my mom was about in the early stages of arthritis. And that's how I left it. Literally 3 months, 4 months later, my wife started improving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time I realized that there's something here. By this time I was attending Shiv Puja at Ajit Bhai's house. This is when the water project came on board, and Bhai said, Bharat, Mukesh, you come along as well. We came over again, a lot happened. And as I said, Ajit Bhai has been a mentor, and he used to train us how to speak to Swami, not to touch his feet without asking him. A lot of training. And one of the things he said, because I said, I've got these questions to ask. And he very lovingly said, look, you'll only have a few seconds if we get an interview, if. And you keep these questions with you, so when you're in front of Swami, you can question them. Anyway, we had the first interview, turned out to be a spiritual interview, nothing happened. I came out, and I said, Bhai, what happened now? When do I ask these questions to Swami? He goes, well, that's it. We have to see if he calls us again. So I said, when will you answer my questions? He goes, that's it. Anyway, we went for the water project, had lovely experiences. We saw Swami's project, how in magnitude it is. We were very fortunate. It was on the third interview where Swami called us in. And this time it was a one-to-one interview, a very quick interview. I recall Baba called me in. I sat his lotus feet. And straight away he started saying, your mind is up and down, up and down. And he goes, you're moving everywhere, you're not stable. And he said, eczema is gone.
He said that, eczema is gone.
So I said, and he was right. You know, my wife had very little. And for the father, and he, then he said, father, still a bit of time. It'll take time. And it's that second question which inspired me to say, hold on, these are the questions I had to ask. And that's subconsciously I said, wow, he's going through my thoughts. And for me, that was a twitch. Then he's either a superhuman being, he's a special mind reader, or he's God. And I think that was, for me, that was the start of coming to Prashanthi on a regular basis. I've been very fortunate to come several times. And hence, Gram Seva was the main thing which I was not involved in. And that's the part I wanted to get involved. So for me, it was a hunger. The love I have for Swami, it was my duty that I should come and serve in His project. It uplifted His spirituality every time I came here. So I think for me, that's the main reason. Wow. That the pull was there for me.
Yes, I mean, God allows many people to test Him. He, in fact, Swami says that you test Him and then, you know, then taste Him. So He gave you that opportunity to actually test Him. And once you tasted Him, and after that you continued to come. And it has never stopped. Amazing. Brother Atul, tell us, how has your journey to Swami been?
Okay, thank you, Saram. So Swami says that His biggest miracle isn't the materializations which He does, but the transformation which He does for us, you know, in humans. So my personal transformation, it started, I'd say, at the age of 12, from a relatively young age, in the sense that when I was at school, our school reverend in a RE lesson said, religious education lesson said, how Christianity was a more evolved religion than Hinduism, because Christianity believed in one God, was monotheistic, whereas Hinduism was polytheistic and believed in many gods. And I felt a little bit insulted, I guess, at that time. So that evening I went home and asked my parents, you know, why is it that we, as Hindus, we believe in many gods? And they didn't really give me an answer that I felt satisfied, you know? I felt like I understood properly. So that really stayed with me, that question stayed with me. It's at the back of my mind, but it was always there. And during that time, my parents believed in Swami. They showed videos, you know, the one you mentioned earlier about Swami materializing Vibhuti from the urn, touched on earlier, and other things. But I didn't really at that time believe. I saw what Swami did, but I just thought he was a magician. You know, I didn't really believe in him. But the funny thing was, this question in my mind about the many gods, Swami put this, it can only be this, in my view, that seed, Swami put in my head that only He can answer that question. Which is odd, because I only thought He was a magician. So it came about that my cousin was getting married here in India in 1990. And I said to my parents, oh, while we're there, I'd like to go and see Baba. And they said, oh, Shirdi Baba. I said, no, they're not Shirdi Baba, the one who lives in Putpati. They said, oh, Sai Baba. I said, Sai Baba. Yeah, we'll go. So, Swami's grace, we came here. And my great-grandfather was living here at the time. And he answered all the questions. So through him, I think, you know, Swami's instrument, he was the conduit through which my questions were answered. And that transformation started there. But what were the biggest change which happened was, at that time, I was a very big meat eater, you know, non-vegetarian, to the extent that if there was one meal where there wasn't non-veg, I would really, you know, kick up a fuss with my mum. A good example of that was shortly after we left here in Prashanthi, we'd gone to Mysore for a tourist, you know, to see, look around. And the restaurant we went to, as it was a Thursday, they only had vegetarian food. And I made such a fuss that my father had to specifically order a non-vegetarian dish just for me. That's, you know, it's an example of how big I was on, you know, on non-veg. And yet, within a couple of months of returning back to the UK, I stopped, totally stopped, overnight. And I remember calling my mum, because I used to go home at the weekends, I was living separately where I was working, and I said to mum, you know, please don't make any non-veg for me, because I stopped.
But how did this happen?
So, I'd say in two ways. First of all, when we were there, sitting before Sai Kunthal, obviously, in 1990, in the sand, And I was sitting there, and Swami, as he walked past me, he looked at me, and he gave me a very stern look.
Mm-hmm.
And that really affected me. I thought, oh, Swami thinks, you know, what does Swami think about me? Is he upset with me? So later on, I saw my great-grandfather, I explained this to him, and he said, no, don't worry, you know, just because Swami looks at you like that doesn't mean that, you know, he's upset with you, or you've done something wrong. He loves you. Yeah, he loves you, he loves you, he loves you. But I think it was a bit of a tough nut to crack. So the other thing he did was, again, through my great-grandfather and my grandfather who lived in Pune at the time, they said to me, read the Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. And that book was in our house. It had been around the house for a time. My parents had all read it. You know, and I'd never touched it. I saw the book, an orange book with a man with long hair on the front. That's how I thought about it. Never looked at it. But when these people, who obviously are very highly respected, said to me, read it, I did that when I got back. And in the book, he's practicing Kriya Yoga and talks of many stories, wonderful stories in there. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to practice Kriya Yoga. So when I thought I wanted to do that, I thought I'd have to become vegetarian. And that was the second half, I think, of the conversion. You know, first that look of Swami, and then through the book, I became vegetarian.
Amazing. You don't know what that one look, you know, if you look, when you're hearing to so many experiences of all our brothers, and you know, everywhere it is just that one look. Sometimes it is just that one pat, it is just one gesture, and you don't know what it will do to you and what it has done to you. Amazing.
Absolutely. So another thing I want to talk about, and we've touched on it before, is about Swami's motherly love.
Yes.
Some personal examples I've had of that. So firstly was an interview in 2003 with in a small group with Ajit Bhai. And in that, Swami sitting in his divine asana, and he leant over, and my hand was resting on the ground, on the floor. And he said, show me your watch. So I put my arm up in the air. And at the time I had this Casio watch, quite popular at the time. To me it was very functional. It had the date, alarm, stopwatch, all
yes.
that good stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
But it didn't look that good, I guess. But that never worried me. But Swami's our divine mother. Yeah? He wants us to look nice. He was proud of his children. So he made this disapproving look on his face, and he turned his hand in the way which we're all very familiar with now, and materialized this beautiful gold watch. And he said, after he materialized it, he said, this is a Rolex watch, it's worth 20 lakhs.
Oh, my God.
And then he showed the other brothers, you know, some of the other brothers in the room, and at that point he hadn't said, this is for you. So I made eye contact with Ajit Bhai, and I felt it as well. He said, no, just wait there, because the last thing I want to do is go forward. And he said, he might say, who told you to come forward? So I just waited there. Then after a little while, he asked me to come forward. And as I approached him, I was remembering that in the same interview, a little while earlier, out of his graciousness and love for one of the other brothers, he had materialized a beautiful Navratna ring for him.
Mm.
And when he went forward, he put both his hands forward to Swami to offer. And Swami said, you've got 10 fingers, but I've only got one ring. So remembering that, I didn't do anything. He didn't put any hand forward. He pulled my hand forward, asked me to take off the watch, and then put the Rolex on.
Wow.
So that was one example of motherly love. Another one was in 2001, when Swami, I think probably the same time Mukesh Bhai got the personal interview, Swami gave all of us press, which is an amazing trip. And in that personal interview, he asked about my wife. Several times, and he graciously gave a gown, one of his gowns for her. I mean,
oh, wow.
Just for me, it was, I think pretty much everyone in the group is so kind, you know, is showering his love on all of us at many levels. And he gave a gown for my wife Sheetal, and he also blessed a handkerchief for her. And it struck me that, you know, as a mother and as a father also, as a parent, when you don't just think about your children who are there, you think about all your children, yeah. So even though Swami's daughter wasn't there, he remembered her and gave something for her. So I tell my wife, you know, when she feels bad that she never had that personal contact with Swami, I said, look, you didn't have that personal contact, but he still remembered you, and you did very well out of it. You know?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And the third example regarding example of motherly love was when our son Ishwar was a baby, a few months old, he started crawling. And we had this picture of Ram and Sita on the wall. Unusual, because normally Ram looked from Sita. Was this Ram and Sita, Lord Rama? And he was trying to touch it. So he's climbing up, he was on the bed, climbing up the bed, trying to reach it, but wouldn't reach it and tumble back on the bed. And he kept doing this, kept trying. We were just watching, enjoying, you know. But after a time when clearly he wasn't going to do it, you know, we picked him up, lifted him up, and held him so he could touch the picture. And it struck me, and that's exactly what Swami does with us, you know, out of his motherly love. If we keep trying, you know, persistency, consistency, intensity, if we fail, ultimately, he will take us there. He'll get it for us. He'll do that out of his divine motherly love.
Amazing.
And on that subject of motherly love, so as I mentioned, we have a son, Ishva, who's 11 now, and Swami's blessed us with a girl, Sayesha, who's 9. And in that interview in 2001, he told us, you have one boy, one girl. He said, 2 children, balanced, that's enough. So so we only got 2. But what I've learned so much through our children, you know, about our relationship with Swami. So as we are parents to our children, Swami is our divine mother and father to us.
Yes.
So as an example, you know, I'll tell my son, look, don't do that, because if you do A, B will happen. And because he's small, he can't see that connection. And after I said that, I think, gosh, that's just what Swami's doing with us. He's telling us, don't do this, because he can see if we do this, something else will happen. But just like our children can't see it, we can't see the things that Swami can see. So very often I'm reminded of that relationship. Another one is, if my son or my daughter, they've got a last sweet, but rather than eating themselves, they offer it, they give it to a friend. You know, being unselfish. We're so happy with them that they're being unselfish that we'll give them another sweet, or another 2 sweets. Yeah? So they don't lose out. And it's just like that with Swami. You know, if we do something, if we're unselfish, I remember the story where one of his Swami's students, Swami materializes a beautiful ring for him. The break comes, summer break comes, he goes home. When he's about to leave, his sister's crying because she wants the ring. Yeah? And in the end, he feels bad for his sister, so he takes the ring that Swami's given to him, materializes for him, and gives it to his sister, and goes back to Prashanti. Well, after he gets back, Swami notices Swami doesn't miss a thing, right? And he says, what happened to the ring I gave you? He said, Swami, my sister was crying, she wanted it, so I gave it to her. Swami was so happy, immediately, he materializes another ring and gives it to him.
Wow.
So it's that thing about unselfishness, and That's the learning.
Amazing. Sure. I think you know, all those lessons that Swami has taught us all these years, once we start practicing them in real life, you begin to relish them more. You begin to see how relevant they are. And actually, you begin to experience that how spirituality is not something to be practiced in the mandir or in the puja rooms or in the that part of the day when you have reserved for God, but it is something which has to become a way of life. How has it been with you, Brother Mahesh? You know, you are the CEO of a firm. Can I ask you how practical it has been for you to live Swami's teachings in real life?
Brother, you're right. Being in business, obviously, is very difficult to follow the teachings. You know, sometimes you're a hypocrite in what you do and how you say. But I think it comes over time. As Swami says, tell me your company and I'll tell you who you are. And the fact that you're in the satsang all the time, you're coming. And the way it comes in is that in your daily work, you look at, I'm in insurance, and it's a very personal to one-to-one business. Your motives change. You're transformed in the way you talk to clients. The you're more ethical. I think that's what I've experienced for what I did.
Does it pay to be ethical?
It does. It goes in the, as long as you're truthful and ethical, it comes over time.
So there could be short-term setbacks.
Yes. This is our 25th year in our business. We're very fortunate, and now it's paying off. And as I said, if you put yourself in the other person's shoes, and it's how you want to be, and it's difficult, but I think the way I've seen it at corporate level is you maintain your standards, then automatically people will look at you and say, well, okay, this is how they are, this is how the firm operates. They won't give you any handouts, they won't give you introduction fees, you know, this is how they operate. So you set your standards slowly. But I think in practice, it's the ethical way of doing business that transforms you over the period. And for me, that's been the case. Truthful where you can. Walk away from what you doesn't fit the box. And you create your own standards. And to me, I think that's where the teaching comes in, and that's where, I think, as I said, transformation is not what you feel what you're doing. It's when others come and talk to you and say, oh, you don't do this, or they talk about you and say, well, he's a Sai Baba devotee. You know, right. He won't do this, he won't do that. And so when others talk about it, that's how you appreciate Swami and say, wow, it's because of him I am here. It's because of him I've been taken to locations. So that's how I see the transformation.
Amazing. You know, you get that courage. You get that self-confidence that Bhagavan talks about, you know. We know that confidence is not on that little self that we are, but on that huge capital S that he is. And when you know that, when you live that, then you have the courage to practice on and live those values. How has it been with you, Arvind, in trying to live these values?
Two of Swami's teachings is love all self, or and seeing Swami in others.
Is it easy in the corporate life to see Swami in others?
In corporate life, it's different. While we're here in Prashanti and doing Gram Seva, it's easy to see Swami in the people that we serve, because they see Swami in us. And it's easy to see Swami within our brothers. But to practice this in a corporate world is a different game.
Yes.
With Swami's grace, recently I've been promoted to be a manager of my team. Mm-hmm. One of my colleagues also applied for the same job. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, he didn't get the job. So initially, it became very difficult for me to fulfill my role, because he was there and he was being objective and difficult in the workplace. So this went on for a couple of months, to the point where I thought, perhaps this job isn't for me. Mm-hmm. So I prayed to Swami, and like this interview, Swami's put me in that role for a particular reason, and I thought I should make the best of it. So I prayed to Swami and just remembered my time with Swami. Said I must see Swami within him. So I started praying for him. I would think of him, and I'd pray for him, and actually see Swami within him. This took some time, so over a period of 2-3 months. Mm-hmm. Slowly, there's some transformation. And now we are getting along in the workplace. So it's very difficult, but if you do practice, if you are consistent with that, Swami is there. And if you can see Swami in them, then there's no difference.
Oh, so slowly and slowly you do see the transformation happening. You see how Swami is working, but once you believe in that, you really sincerely believe and don't judge.
Well, if that wasn't the case, I would have left the job.
Yes.
So, yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I think this is the most heartening part of our relationship with Bhagwan, isn't it? Yes. How he beautifies our life in every dimension. Isn't it, Atul? You work in the Ford Motor Company as an IT manager. You also deal with a lot of people, isn't it? How has it been working with so many people and practicing Swami's teachings?
So I think, like, excuse me, Brother Irvin, there are probably a couple of teachings I try. One is about positivity. I used to be a pessimist, and it was like a safety mechanism, right? Because if you're a pessimist, you think something's not going to happen. If it doesn't happen, great. You didn't think it was going to happen anyway. If it does happen, it's a bonus. Mm. So I guess I used it as like a safety mechanism. But then, you know, listening to Swami's teachings and the Yadbhav and Tadbhav, that's the thing that really sticks in my mind. In fact, you know, I tell colleagues at work, even though it's Sanskrit, I tell them, you know, there's a Sanskrit saying, Yadbhav and Tadbhav, as you think, so you become, or as you feel, so you become. So I try and be more positive at work now.
Wonderful.
Sorry, a small example, but a classic example is where, you know, first statement you make with someone, opening remark is, how are you? And I listen out to what people say. 90% of the time they say, oh, not so bad. It's a throwaway comment, but it's not so bad. And I used to be like that, oh, not so bad. But now I say, very good. Yeah?
Great.
And things change. You know, there's this colleague who's based in Vienna. And when you talk to him, how are you? First thing he says, I'm fantastic. And it rubs off. People in the office say, oh, I love talking to this guy, right? He's always so positive.
Yes. Yes.
Sure. And the other thing is, it's very simple, but Swami says, A, B, C, always be cheerful. So at work, I'm just trying to always be positive, cheerful and upbeat, because some people walk around, as Swami says, was it, with a castor oil face.
Yes.
So it's been a long time to get that out. And so just trying to be cheerful, just trying to lighten the atmosphere, be positive. And
wonderful. In fact, Bhagavan once said during the summer course in 1979, Swami said the first mark of a spiritual person is his cheerful disposition. I mean, when you have God with you, you are the person who should always be smiling. If you do not have a cheerful disposition, if you do not know how to smile, if you do not know how to make the other person smile, then you are far from spirituality. And I think this whole concept of positivity, spreading positivity, is so important, because, you know, the only way we can bring that positive change in this world, we can make this world a better place, is only when we cover the world with more fragrance can the effects of the foul odor go. And the only way to do it is only through spreading this positivity, through spreading this fragrance. It's really wonderful that, you know, Swami has brought in that transformation. In fact, once when Bhagavan was speaking to the students and the speakers who are going to speak during the Sara, Swami said that I want all my students all the time to speak only about positivity. You should speak only about things that will inspire people. And I think that is what you're doing now in your own way, in your company. You're trying to spread that positivity. And I think that is something which will bring a smile on his face. Wonderful.
I think, brother, I'd just like to add as well that Atul is right. You know, the phone, when we got a training on how to answer the phones. And it's that first second of you say your company name and at what attitude you say it. And that's the change we've brought forward. But again, one of the other teachings of Swami, which I try and practice as much as I can, because in the field I am in, people ring up, they've got an incident, and to them it's a small leak, but it's the end of the world to them. And you've got to be compassionate, try and understand. And one of the interviews we were with Swami, and Swami said, how many types of knowledge? And obviously we were there, and Bhai was there, and said, general knowledge, spiritual knowledge, intellectual knowledge. And then Swami, I think we all seen it, he turned around, he opened his left palm, and with the right palm, he thumped it three times, and he goes, I want practical, practical, practical. Mm. I want practical knowledge. And I think in the field, for the field I'm in, that's what I try and do. Sometimes you have to go against the rules. Sometimes, as the saying goes, you know, your action is wrong, but if your intention is right, and as long as you're practical about it, then I think that's how the change comes across, and there's people see that change in you, and the positiveness is what carries you and the other person as well. And I think these are the trickles of teachings which come over a period of time.
And I think as you practice them again and again, you mature and you learn new ways to live those teachings in your life. Kapil, can we have the final word from you about the difference that Bhagavan has brought in your life, in your professional sphere, in your personal sphere, and in your social sphere, in trying to live those values? How has it enriched your life?
I've been very fortunate with Swami's grace to have, in inverted commas, been a music boy.
Mm. Yes.
The opportunities given to me in Prashanthi Nilayam. The very first instance being back in 2004, I was coming on Sir's trip, Ajit Uncle's trip. And prior to that, a year, I'll narrate a few experiences and the lessons that I've learned from that in terms of the impact it's had on my life.
Sure.
I remember 2003, I'd had an operation on my knee, and I remember laying down at home and listening to a satsang. I was fortunate enough to attend a satsang at our center where a bhajan singer from Bangalore had come and held a workshop. And one of the experiences he shared was how Swami had once stood right in front of him whilst he was on the harmonium, and eyes met, and it was as if it was love at first sight. And in the back of my mind, you know, you make certain wishes, requests, desires come about. You'd know this as a bhajan singer yourself. I wish that, God, I wish that would happen to me. But I left it. And fast forward a year, I find myself in the mandir.
Mm-hmm.
And it's during the aarti, I'm at the front. And Swami stood in front of me. At the time, two students were escorting him, but he stood in front of me, and our eyes met. And the smile on his face, the radiance, that they're just,
yes,
the beauty, the ashwaryam you associate with him,
yes,
fantastic. And it must have been for 30 seconds or so.
Beautiful.
And it was only until a couple of months later that the penny dropped, that, you know, this is what I wish for, and this, mm-hmm, is what he's given to me. Fast forward 2 years, and I come on a separate trip during the month of November in 2006. And out of a group of 180 of us, 9 boys get called into the mandir, 4 separate instances. November is a very busy month. That season is peak season, if one may use that term, especially, yes, after the Dashera.
Yes.
15th, I remember the exact dates, or who would forget? 15th, 16th, and 17th afternoon, we get called in. And again, the opportunities are, you're at the front. And first instance, as a harmonium player, Swami's watching me. And I remember this from 2004, when Uncle used to say to us, you know, Swami is very, he pays so much attention to detail. What I mentioned earlier in terms,
yes,
of the detail that,
yes,
you know, you learn from the students.
Yes.
Swami pays so much attention to detail. You know, don't make any mistakes. This is added pressure on us as, yes, musicians. And Swami's watching us throughout. That he's watching me, and to such an extent that Sai Sir,
yes,
comes up to me at the end. He says, you know, Swami was giving so much attention to you. Your fingers are up and down. I think we may need to give you a double scale on the harmonium just for that. The next evening, we get called in again. But on the way to the mandir, one of my seniors says to me, because another brother was to play harmonium, and the senior says to me, I bet you Swami asks you why you're not playing harmonium. And I dismiss that statement altogether. Reason being, I'm thinking, who are you to even think or assume what the Lord is going to do? You won't believe it. In those days, Bhagwan was, you know, he was on the wheelchair,
yes,
but he was escorted in the mandir, you know.
Yes.
First thing, when he comes through those mandir doors, he looks at me, and very inquisitively, he looks and he's, you know, hand gestures, where is your harmonium?
Oh, wow.
And why that's a special moment for me is because that acknowledgement as an individual, yes, on a human level.
Yes.
That acknowledgement. Go through, I sing a bhajan. The next evening, he cuts me off.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're in cloud nine, and you fall into the depths of whatever it is. It's the final bhajan. It's a student, UK boy, you know. And I remember turning around to the harmonium player and singing for Shruti. And I only say 2 words, if not 2 syllables of the bhajan, for everyone behind, all the boys behind me push me, say, Aarti. And Swami, basically, and one of the lead singers starts singing Aarti. And Swami looks at me, and he laughs at me, and he giggles at me. And I'll be honest with you, I'm crestfallen, because I feel really embarrassed. One of the brothers says, it's okay, never mind. You did a great service. You made Swami laugh. But still, you know, that's not much of a reconciliation, you know.
Mm.
So, after those 3 instances, everyone's on cloud 9, apart from myself. A few days later, convocation morning, we get called again.
Mm-hmm.
22nd.
Oh, wow. On the convocation
morning. On the convocation morning, and as it happens, as it turns out, Sai Sir says to Sailor Sir, you know, this boy will play harmonium. And another request, which I'd made ages ago, and Swami fulfilled, that of playing for Swami students, harmonium, is Swami, he grants that, the task, he grants that request. Student, UK boy, and I'm sat next to Sailor Sir,
And that happens on convocation morning.
On convocation morning, 22nd. Oh, I will never forget this day. I mean, there's many dates I won't forget, but 22nd November 2006.
You want to feel like a student, and he gave you that experience on the convocation.
It's surprising how you say that, because on the third evening, you know, we have desires. You know, we wish we were part of this,
yes.
You know,
yes.
This opportunity. We wish we were students.
Yes.
And Swami, in one of those instances, said, you know, all UK boys are mine. All students are mine. This is in Telugu.
Yes.
He says that, and Sai Sir translates for us.
Yes.
All are mine. 7 years later, it was only until 2013, but again the penny drops. What does Swami say about property? He has no property.
Yes.
But his only property is his students. And for them, and in that instance, we said, all are mine. As if an indication, you are my property. That means you are my student. So, a loose sort of analogy, or, you know, the 22nd of November, I'm sat next to Salish Sir, budgets are going on, and the 10th budget, so student, UK boy, and the 10th budget falls to me. And I start, and Swami has a very disgruntled look on his face. You know, very inquisitive, very angry, sort of. And he talks to, I can see from a distance, I'm 6 rows behind, sat next to Sir, and I can see everything. He's on the thing, he's on the throne. And he's asking, talking with Sai Sir. Sai Sir looks in my direction. Swami looks in somewhat in my direction. And in my mind, I'm thinking, Swami, please do not cut me off. you've done it once. Again, you know, ignorance on my part. Mm. Swami, you've done it once. Please, whatever mistake I've done, aparada sahasrani, you know that prayer that we make. Please forgive me, my Lord.
Mm.
And next thing, what happens is something you can never imagine, as if it's a scene of biblical proportion. Students' path, they part, they create a pathway, they move to one side and then the other side. And all I can see is Swami looking at me and the smile on his face. I'll treasure that forever.
Wow.
What I came to find out later on was Swami was so inquisitive. Who is the singer? Who is the harmonium player? I can't see them.
Oh.
The lesson which you asked me, the impact it's had, as I said, my colleagues, my brothers, they're on cloud nine. But for me, it was a different feeling. It was that of not worry or concern, because to whom is given, a great deal is expected. And I remember each of those instances coming back to my room, thinking, what is it that you want of us? You've given us so much. Swami has given us this opportunity to be part of a Gram Seva, or to be part of a water project, or to be a music boy, you know, or to be part of a play. What is it you want from us, Swami? And I think this is the impact that it's had on me back in the UK, be it amongst my fellow Sai brothers and sisters in the UK Sai fraternity, be it amongst my family members, or be it at work. It's not to say that I've made complete transformation. I've got a long, long way to go. You know, I'm probably still on square one. But it's that conscious effort, or the case of remembering that, you know, what is it? What is it? What is wrong with me? What is it? Earlier you asked a question in terms of impact on our professional lives, the corporate world, and the impact that it has, or the struggles that we face in terms of implementing the values. And for me, like our fellow brothers, it's been a volatile journey. I've been blessed, Swami's grace, to work for some of the biggest investment banks in the world. That's not to say that it's not been a smooth ride. It's never been a smooth ride. The volatile nature of the organization that you're working in, the criticism that you may receive because you don't follow the norm. But at the same time, especially since 2006 and onwards, it's been a case of, okay, whatever negative feeling we may develop, it's a case, why am I having a negative feeling towards that person? And you know, Swami says, whatever negativities you associate with another, it's because those are within yourself.
Yes.
It's a reflection of your inner self. So it's a case of self-reflection, you know, introspection. What is it? Why am I having these feelings? You know, anger, jealousy, hatred. Why? What is it that's wrong with me? What do I need to change within myself in order, well, just to change? And if the outcome is to be, you know, appreciated or loved by all, so be it. I think initially it was a case of, what do I need to do to change myself in order to be appreciated or loved? To now it's a case of, well, I'm not so concerned of whether someone does love me or appreciate me. What do I need to change within myself? Why am I getting these negative feelings? And that constant questioning comes about and is still an ongoing feature in my life. And I think that's perhaps, for me, the biggest change. Yes, a long way to go in terms of complete development, but it's only with Swami's grace.
Absolutely. You don't really now think so much about is someone loving me or not? Is someone caring for me or not? You want to know and ask every day to yourself, am I that love or not?
Absolutely, because we, as Sai devotees, or, you know, spiritual aspirants, sadhakas, I think the main question we must ask ourselves is, what do we need to do to make, you know, our master proud of us?
Yes.
You know, what does our master expect of us? If we claim to be Sai devotees or followers of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, are we following his tenets? Are we following his teachings? Am I following his guidelines, his rules, down to the T? That's what is most paramount, or should be most paramount. That's what should be the most important feature in our life.
Absolutely. And I think once you have that focus, everything else is taken care of by him. You know, once we know that every time we raise our hand, we raise our hand only for him. If you all the time think that any time we stretch our limbs, we stretch our limbs only for him. If you always remember that if we raise our voice, we raise our voice only for him. If our heart beats, our heart beats only for him. I think once you have that perspective all the time, then automatically things fall into place. And as you mentioned, you know, whatever happens in life, this feeling becomes so much a part of you that you accept everything as his prasadam. And this is my experience too. You know, anything happens, I would always think that, you know, if I'm experiencing this, then this is something that I have created for myself. So if I'm experiencing something that I do not want to experience, it is probably because something that I have done, which is sort of recoiled. So it's something that I have to all the time work on myself. If you want to experience good things in life, then I will have to create those good things.
Definitely.
For me,
like
so,
Swami says, reaction,
yes,
reflection, resound.
Yeah, and he will help us. He will help us to create that world that we want to experience. And in fact, if we take that one step, we all have seen how he takes that 99 steps. It's. We will step in, as I was telling, into the wonderland of Sai. It's really wonderful, brothers. Thank you so much for sharing your time. And I know each one of you can share. Go on sharing for at least another 2-3 hours about the moments that you have had with Bhagwan. We've had, so many of you have had such long journeys with Bhagwan and have come to Prashanti so many times and have those moments which have become really moments which all the time spur you and propel you to work for him, to live for him, to really sanctify every moment thinking about him. So thank you so much for coming to the studios, and I just hope and pray that this journey with Sai finally takes us to that level where we don't think with Sai, but we all the time just live in Sai and become Sai. Thank you so much, brothers.
Sai.
So dear listeners, with that, it's time to draw the curtains to this episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. And I know there is so much to reflect on what was shared the last 1.5 hours. And the best way to do, as Bhagwan always says, is through Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. We have to undergo that process of self-introspection, and then we would see Swami guiding us at every step. As I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama on Bhakta poet Vidyapati. This was presented by Balvikas Children from Bihar and Jharkhand on 15th March 2006. So keep listening. Keep losing yourself in his love. Let us lose ourselves in his love, because that is the only way we can find ourselves. Thank you so much. And as always, keep writing to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Finally, on behalf of all of us at Radio Sai, I thank each one of you for being with us all throughout this journey. And to Bhagwan, our deepest gratitude to Bhagwan for having given us this priceless opportunity to think about Him, to feel Him, and to share His love. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.